Welcome back. For the next 45 minutes or so, we're going to spend walking around Chicago. Robert Lorzel is a writer, editor, photographer. Robert, a Twitter legend? What should I call you?
Just a Twitterer.
Twitterer? Ugh, I hate that word. And a friend of mine. He is the author of, most recently, he's on the show a long time ago with a fabulous book. Now he's the author of Walking in Chicago, 35 Tours of the Windy City's Dynamic Neighborhoods and Famous Lakefront. This is I don't want to call it a follow-up, but you do give credit in here to the great Ryan Verberkmos, who did a Walking Chicago 2008 edition. How did this book come to the publisher, which is a Wilderness Press, which has done an incredibly handsome job of everything in this book, photography, layout, choices. Did they come to you and say, hey, we need to update this book? How did that happen?
Yes, that's pretty much exactly how it happened. This is one of those book projects where the publisher is sort of the impetus. It's not me, the author, coming up with the idea, but the publisher. Originally, they were thinking about just updating Ryan's edition.
Yeah.
But then so much has changed that they said, let's write a whole new one. So it is a second edition. And I have to give him credit for, all the text is new.
Sure.
But some of the walks spring off of the routes that he had chosen.
Yeah, I thought his was in its day, as they say, Robert. A good job. Ryan did a good job. He made some good choices, and he dug deep, which is the essence of a good walking book. You write in the book, several years ago, I decided that I should walk at least an hour every day, no matter what was happening with Chicago's notoriously erratic weather. You said that you came upon small adventures or moments of peaceful reflection and also got in the habit of taking pictures, which made you an astonishingly popular Twitterer. I will never say that. Robert, I'm never going to say I'm never going to say that word out of the context of this very interview. Why did you start walking? You came to Chicago in 1988, I think, or something like that. Or
thereabouts.
Yeah.
Partly it's just why anyone walks around, just to get around.
Yeah, sure.
I've always enjoyed it just as a way to kind of get out and explore. I did have a health issue a few years ago where I was diagnosed as diabetic or pre-diabetic. I mean, it was very low-level concern at this point, but it's obviously something to be concerned about.
Of course.
And one of the things my doctor told me was, well, if you lose some weight and do a little more exercise, that might be enough to get this under control. And so that was part of the impetus for wanting to walk an hour a day. Maybe not. Doctors have said, aerobic sort of exercises where you get your heartbeat up are better.
Right, right, right.
I'm kind of strolling around. I'm not one of these power walkers. So, to be honest, I'm not sure, how much is this really doing for my health? But I did, during that first year, I did lose some weight, and my numbers did come down, so things were looking better.
And you did.
I've been trying to maintain that since. So that's, one motivation.
Sure.
For it.
Sure, but also when you started posting on Twitter, and again, I think it was a Chicago Reader who named you, or you won the best in Chicago
yeah.
person to follow, which is a good thing, man. I trust that yearly list that they come out with. You felt compelled to share, and I love the way you put it, share these small adventures or moments of peaceful reflection. You felt the need to share that with people?
Yeah, as with anything on Twitter, there's the question of whether you are oversharing. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder, how many people care that I am in a particular spot right now taking a picture of some manhole cover that attracted my attention, or a business sign with a misspelled word on it.
Or a deer walking around a cemetery.
Exactly.
I got to tell you, I was hooked. I don't respond often to Twitter. I'll like something instead of saying, "Hey, where's this deer? Where's this deer going?" I'm not into getting into the conversations, but you must have found that the responses. Well, you must have gotten some weird responses, but you must have found some really good ones too. Yes.
Well, and sometimes it starts a conversation. You know, I will. As much as I think I know about Chicago architecture and history, I mean, there are a zillion things I don't know. So I will see some particular building or a sign and take a picture of it and post it on Twitter, not knowing what it is. And next thing you know, people are weighing in with stories about how, you know, their grandmother went to that church or whatever.
Well, the fun.
You know, or don't you realize that that building's by the same architect as this other structure, and you know, so you learn things.
Well, I think
from the conversation.
Well, you and I both share, I think, a real passion for this city's history, and we share a real curiosity about it, and a real sort of desire to indeed know more. And that's why one of the things about this book, and it's wonderful reading, and I think especially in these kind of clamped down times, I think it's the loop tour. I really got a pang in reading the Loop Tour number 2, which takes you through part of the loop, reading about the Palmer House and about Central Camera. You know what I mean? You wrote this, you finished this, I'm assuming, just before the COVID clampdown.
You know, I wrote the book last year, and then there was time this spring for
editing,
last minute revisions. We basically went off to press sometime in March, right around the time COVID-19 was causing a massive shutdown that you all know about. So, like, at the moment we were going to press, I was like, oh boy, some of the places that I mentioned in here are going to at least temporarily close, and I hope not many of them will, you know, permanently close, but who knows what's going to change in terms of all these places that I'm writing about.
Well, I will tell you.
The examples you bring up are two great ones.
Well, I will tell you,
Rick. You wrote a couple of really good columns about walking around downtown.
Oh, after
it was after the looting and
so sad, so sad. But the other thing about this book, I was thinking to myself as I'm reading it, and some many places I have never been, that in simply reading about them, the way in which you write, and I've always thought you were a fine, fine, polished writer, that I was able to kind of go there in absentia. Do you know what I mean? In reading what you wrote about, you know, I know the Palmer House pretty well, but in reading what you wrote about it, and then a little bit about Central Camera, I felt like I was there, and I think that's one of the perhaps astonishing bonuses of this book, is you can travel to many of these places from your chair, in the way Robert writes. Because
I'm trying to encourage people to actually travel on foot, but
I don't know how much editing you got, but they certainly kept your voice alive in these places.
Well, that's good to hear.
Did you have to go through, when you would do, and Robert's going to be on long enough for us to get into real depth in the book, when you would put a place in there, like, you know, the American Writers Museum, which I think you have a lot of places in this book that are relatively untouted in this town. That is among them. I think it's got its flaws to me, but it's still a fascinating, wonderful place if anybody's on Michigan and Lake Street. Do you know what I mean? How were your editors to work with that they say, "Hey, I've never heard of this place. Don't put this in there."
They pretty much gave me free rein with this. There wasn't a lot of back and forth about, you know, like which things to include. It was guidance on how to get the word count down to their limits. I could have written something that was twice as long.
Oh, I'm sure.
I had to send an email of a scream for help at some point. Of like, "Help, this book's going to be too long. What should I do?" And they gave me some advice on like how to trim it down. And but as far as like the question you're asking, it was pretty much up to me what to.
That's great.
Which is sort of a heavy responsibility.
It is.
I was concerned about things like, you know, trying to encompass the different parts of the city, so to get the south side and the west side in there, along with the north side and the southeast side, and you know, but there are lots of places I had to leave out.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm telling you right now.
All in there.
I'm telling you, this book, and again, the title is Walking Chicago, 35 Tours of the Windy City's Dynamic Neighborhoods and Famous Lakeshore, will be enlightening to anybody who thinks they know Chicago, and it will be a revelation to those of you who don't know Chicago. Robert's going to be on all the way till 6:15, so we're going to take a little break here, and I'm going to ask Robert when we come back to talk to me about, here's a place that I was surprised to see in there, and I was so pleased. The Willie Dixon Blues Heaven Foundation. That is a unique Chicago, I'm not going to call it, you know what it's like. It's not an institution, yeah. I would say. But we'll talk about that and all manner of other things. And another of our mutual passions is graveyards, and you will hear plenty, you will hear plenty about that. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Here, ladies and gentlemen, is how Robert Lorzel describes a bit of his near South Side walk. Number 9. Cross to the west side of Michigan, half a block north, to see the Willie Dixon's Blues Heaven Foundation, a small museum in the former office and studio of Chess Records at 2120 South Michigan Avenue, an address that's also the title of an instrumental track by the Rolling Stones, who recorded 5 songs here in 1964. Founded in 1950 by brothers Phil and Leonard Chess, the label recorded some of the earliest rock songs by Chuck Berry and others, and many influential blues musicians, including Bo Diddley, Willie Dixon, Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters, Buddy Guy, and Etta James. The company moved several times during its history, operating here from 1957 to 65, recording in one tiny unventilated room. He gives you the museum days and hours. That's a nice job of just highlighting something that that not many people even know about in Chicago. You must have felt, Robert Lorzel, when you were doing that, sort of felt the sense that, oh, God, I hope someone reads this and really does go there.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That and a lot of the places, I mean, I'm hoping, well, that's the thing right now with the with our COVID situation, yeah. Right now, yeah. There are a lot of places that are closed.
Sure.
So you can still take the walks in my book.
Exactly.
Some of the places along the route may be open, some may not be, but you know, the purpose of walking around and taking in the sights is still a great thing to do. Being able to eat in a particular restaurant or go into a particular museum, maybe you can or maybe you can't right now.
Right. And you say that somewhere in the book, I think you say, yeah, in maybe, yeah, the introduction, that like this COVID is hitting, we don't know what's going to be happening here. You do a lovely, lovely job with, and it's a tough one to do, with Bronzeville. Talk to me about Bronzeville. I have ever, even as a kid, been fascinated with that neighborhood, especially for what it once was and for what it might again be. Could you ramble, Robert Lorzel, about?
Yeah, well, I mean, especially when you go down Martin Luther King Drive,
yep, yep,
and all along there, I mean, just to look at the buildings without even knowing who lived in them or what important things happened there is amazing, because,
yeah,
I mean, just particularly the graystones, these houses that were built in, I think, predominantly in the late 1800s,
mm-hmm,
they're sort of like miniature castles,
yep,
or mansions designed to fit on a small Chicago lot. But when you look at the design that goes into them, they're just beautiful.
Well,
and
they say
along there through Bronzeville, I mean, some of them had fallen into disrepair, and many of them have been improved in recent years. I hope they survive. And
don't you find, though, that some, notably in Bronzeville, that some buildings just, they don't scream at you, but they whisper at you that someone important once lived here.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So as you go along there, I mean, you'll see where Ida B. Wells lived. You'll see where the Marx Brothers lived, which,
mm-hmm, yeah, which is like, what?
About,
no,
like,
that's
how zany life must have been on that block when those guys were there.
Harpo, Chico, Gummo, and Zeppo. Also, yeah, you mentioned Idea Pendleton. The Bronzeville chapter is so rich in history, and it's rich in good food. Chicago's chicken and home to Chicken and Waffles is a great restaurant. I hope it's open now. But I do think you've got a real good point here. These walks can be taken, for your health, but also for your enlightenment. If you carry the book with you and you go by a house and it's not open, and I'm sure, you know, Louis Armstrong's, former house is not open, you will still get a sense. I really believe that, tell me I'm nuts, Robert, that history does kind of whisper to current residents, and the city in its past does kind of whisper. You also do, and tell me when I've stopped complimenting you enough, will you please? You also do a lovely job of picking what you think people might need to know on a larger scale about how Chicago made its lakefront. I think that's a fascinating short little thing about reversing the river. What dictated to you what you wanted to do in that way of enlightenment?
Yeah, well, you know, that's one of those things that's kind of hard to say exactly how I came to the decision which of those things to write about. I mean, some of them just seemed obvious, but a lot of them, I mean, these are huge topics. I mean, people have written books.
Oh, dozens of books.
The reversal of the river and how the lakefront was preserved. But trying to convey at least a few of the key facts about it so that people who aren't as familiar with the history will get a little short history lesson.
What do you think? There's a chapter 8 is devoted to Chicago's Riverwalk. What do you personally think of the Riverwalk? You do a nice job of detailing it. What do you think of it? And you were living here while it was transformed.
Yeah. I like it quite a bit. I mean, I think there are times when, I mean, not to be criticized places, like, you know, like people criticize Navy Pier for being too much of like a big shopping mall.
Sure.
And sometimes a Riverwalk, if it's busy and there's lots of people sitting at the restaurants, I mean, that's a great place to just sit around and have some wine or drink. But
right. It
might not be as relaxing for just a walk through there. But, you know,
good point.
We were both working over at Tribune Tower. I loved going over, and I would work a night shift where I finished work at about 10 p.m., and I would just walk over to the Riverwalk, and from 10 to 11 p.m., there wasn't much going on there, but the river is beautiful at that time of night when you see the lights reflecting off the water.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a nice place to take in the architecture, too.
Yeah.
Look up beyond the river at the skyscrapers there. I'm really glad that they've changed that.
Sure, no question. You also do a lovely job, I think, and it's a hard one to do because many books have been written about it. Also, Hyde Park and Kenwood. You call it the South Side's cultural coast. Why?
boy, you're pressing me with these questions of how I came up with things.
I know.
I'm not even sure if I remember.
All right. Oh, well.
The origins of that. I mean,
well, that's even better than dig deep into your mind and say, wait a minute, why did I say that?
I mean, I guess because of the university being there, the University of Chicago,
it's
considered sort of like an intellectual center of Chicago, which kind of also lends itself to cultural events and programming. So I guess that's where that comes from. But it's also with, you know, the architecture down there and just the people who live there and the mixture of
culture. Well, you know, it's also got the DuSable Museum of African-American History, as you point out. It's got the Regenstein Library, the Smart Museum of Art. It's got Court Theater. It's got the Oriental. I can see why you called it that easily. You also have Valois, which is the one of the most famous diners in America, I would think, at this point. It's a, you know, sort of, what are those things called? That self-service. What do you call that kind of diner? It is a diner where you walk up and you select your food and the guy. It's like Manny's, right?
Yeah.
What do we call those things? Self-service? I don't know what they're called. My family.
Well, it's famous because of his most famous customer, Barack Obama.
Yeah, he was famous. I knew a lot of customers in there who were not as famous. You also go sort of further afield here. Your chapter on Wolf Lake is fascinating to me and really, really well done. And I would hazard to say that 90% or more of people who call themselves Chicagoans have never been anywhere. They may have seen it driving to New Buffalo or someplace.
Right. If you've driven on the Skyway, you've looked out your car window at it.
Right.
And that's, I was the same way. That is one of the walks in this book where I discovered it myself in the course of writing this, and I've gone back a couple of times. And that whole southeast side of Chicago has several other parks beyond the ones in beyond Wolf Lake, which I included in the book.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed going to Hegwisch Marsh and Big Marsh Park, and it's a place called Indian
Ridge Marsh.
All of those are these big tracts of land with lots of wildlife.
I saw
herons. And
yeah, I know.
Muskrats and all kinds of things in the prairie and the marsh there. And there aren't that many people in the park. So if you need a place to go to do social distancing while you're enjoying the outdoors, all those places are great.
Well, that's another thing about this book, ladies and gentlemen, listeners of mine, that it's easy to partake of these 35 different walks in a socially distanced manner. Even the river walk, there's nothing out there. I do a lot of walking too, and there's nothing out there that is very crowded. Robert, would you, when you were on your kind of health kick, starting your walking things, would you decide? I know you live in Uptown. Would you say, "Well, I'm just going to walk to the Tribune today," or would you? You'd vary your route, obviously.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing I did back in the days when I was still using the CTA, which I have not been doing lately.
Yeah,
but. If I was going downtown or wherever I was going, I would frequently decide to get off of the red line like one stop early or two stops beyond where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
I'd think like, oh, I've got a little extra time here. Instead of getting off the red line at Grand Avenue and walking to Tribune Tower, why don't I go downtown and walk up, you know, through the loop on my way there?
Yeah, that's a wonderful idea. I used to recommend to people to go to find a public library in a neighborhood and go into the library and ask the people working at the library, what should I see that's nearby? And just walk around there. This is as you display so artfully in Walking Chicago, 35 tours of the Windy City's dynamic neighborhoods and famous lakeshore, as you so artfully do, you show what a rich and rewarding kind of city this is, even in this weird, weird time in which we live. When we come back, and Robert's going to be on all the way till 6:15, we're going to take a trip to Beverly, which I find Beverly one of the most amazing neighborhoods in the world. It reminds me sometimes, if I turn around, I think I'm in the middle of Winnetka. we'll be back right after the news with my buddy Robert Lorzel. Again, the name of the book, Walking Chicago, 35 Tours of the Windy City's Dynamic Neighborhoods and Famous Lakeshore. We'll be right back. Robert Lorzel, who is an author of newspaper stories, magazine stories for Chicago Magazine and other places, and does a lot of wonderful work for WBEZ, is recently the author of Walking Chicago, 35 Tours of the Windy City's Dynamic Neighborhoods and Famous Lakeshore. He and I both have the wild passions for cemeteries. Robert is a well-known. I'm going to give you his Twitter handle. I guess it's a handle, right, Robert? What do they call that? Yeah, you know, I sound like a real Twitter expert. But his following him on Twitter won him the Chicago Reader's best poll for best Chicagoan to follow on Twitter. It is at Robert Lorzel. Put that in your phone, your machine, or however you get Twitter. That's also his website, robertlorzel.com. You do a lovely job, not just in this book, but on Twitter and other places, of displaying your affection and passion for Graceland Cemetery. You know that I share that with you. How was yours born? How did you discover Graceland?
You know, I live pretty close to Graceland, and when I first moved to Uptown 14 years ago, mm-hmm. I was not really that I mean, I knew the cemetery was there, but I hadn't really spent any time going inside. And I think I took one of the guided tours that the Chicago Architecture Foundation offers. It was like my first go-through. But then, you know, in more recent years, I just realized it's kind of like my neighborhood yard in a way.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place to go.
Oh.
And I can just go over there and there's the history of it, but the architecture and design and art that went into the design of many of the beautiful monuments. And it's an arboretum with many great trees in it. Sadly, some of them were destroyed in the recent
Right. They just recently opened,
This reopened Wednesday, I think.
Yeah.
So I went over there. It looks pretty good. I think, like, if you really knew the trees and exactly where they were, you will probably notice some that are either missing or are missing some limbs right now, which is kind of sad to see. But for the most part, I mean, it's still a beautiful place to walk around.
Well, you make the point here that it and other cemeteries, not all of them, can be at once kind of these outdoor art galleries, an outdoor history museum, and a wonderful way to touch nature in the midst of a city. I think people who go, oh, you only like graveyards. I remember when my daughter Fiona was 10-ish, I took her around to say, look, this is where Marshall Field was buried. And she went, who used to have a store here? That was after they turned Marshall Field into Macy's. But it's a wonderful way to do that and to visit visit the grave on there's a small island in Lake Willowmere, Burnham Island, where Daniel Burnham and his family are buried, and is one of the, to my mind, it's unique, and it's also one of the special places in Chicago, which is filled with special places. What's this book? I'm hoping that COVID hasn't prohibited you from going out and talking about the book at various places, but maybe it has. I know some bookstores are kind of, you know, shuttered.
Yeah, I have not been doing those sorts of in-bookstore events, sadly, kind of relying on things like this radio show to get out the word.
Well, I'm trying to get out the word in every saloon that I get to go in, because I really do think this is a remarkable book. I like Ryan Verberkmos's first edition of this, but you bring to it something really, really, really special. You as you write in your short author's note, you say that, you know, countless other Chicagoans know that walking is one of the best ways to discover the world that's within their own city limits. You are showing Chicago what is in their city limits, and I hope inspiring people to get out and take a look. I mean, not everything in the world is on Netflix and Amazon Prime. You must be very pleased to end this conversation with a shout out to your publishers. I think they did a wonderful job with maps and everything else. This is a beautifully laid out book, don't you think?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
And very nice to look through, I hope.
Yeah, it's nice to have a good-looking book. Robert, I miss seeing you. I hope to see you soon, and good luck with this book and everything else you do, pal.
Well,
take care.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. What are you working on now?
Well, there's another book that I've been trying to write for about, 17 years now.
Okay.
That's just going on, and it's probably, like, if I published it now, it would be, like, 1,000 pages about Chicago history, you know. I need to tame that project and sort of figure out how to get it to a publishable form. But I enjoy just delving into.
Yeah, I know you do. I know it is on. It pops from every single page of this book. So you'll be fascinated to know that I'm interviewing right after this, after some commercials, a couple of women named Corey Rumer Finley and Marianne Mather, who you know well, who put together. Hey, what do you think of this book? He had it coming. Don't you like it?
Yes, I do.
Oh,
and particularly the way they use original documents and photos.
Yeah.
It's really kind of an ideal way to display the source information, but also make it readable.
Yeah.
So it's you know, so many books in the past have just been text, and
I know.
You don't actually get to see the document.
Well, I think in this modern age, I mean, I think this should be the template for future kinds of books like this. They did one. One was done recently on Leopold and Loeb that used which was a beautiful book, and I think the use of images. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Nina Barrett?
Yes, and that too is a great book. Robert, continued success. I miss seeing you, and maybe one day, if the Tribune doesn't move out of the wherever we are now, the Prudential Building, I'll see you soon. But congratulations. I really love this book.
Thanks.
Take care.